Welcome to Stay on Course with me, Julie Riga. My life has been a roller coaster of highs and lows, but what I know to be true is that when we are grounded in our purpose and savor the sweet moments of life, we are truly a success. Today, you are going to get the ingredients for success because life is salty and life is sweet. Together, let's explore the possibilities of our own lives and learn from thought leaders around the globe. Ready, guys? Let's cook it. Welcome, welcome, everyone, to the next edition of the Stay on Course podcast. Today, I have an amazing guest, Shivangi Valke, and she is a master trainer, leadership branding coach, and founder of a vibrant nonprofit organization called Thrive. It is a global women's mentoring network active across 10 countries and has catalyzed thousands of mentoring relationships. Shivangi has trained and coached leaders and management teams in over 40 countries globally for organizations such as Google, Johnson & Johnson, Airbus, Pfizer, and Syngenta. Welcome, Shivangi, to the Stay on Course podcast.
Hey, Julie, I'm so excited to be here and to be speaking with you. Such a pleasure.
I am equally as excited because we have been getting to know each other over the past few months, and it's been a pleasure. I'm just excited to hear from you today and all of your wisdom. And before we get started, I like to ask all of my guests, what is your favorite food?
One of my favorite foods is a sweet that is made in my part of India. So I was born and brought up in Mumbai. It used to be called Bombay then. And it is actually something like a steamed dumpling, which has a sweet filling inside it. And I'll call the very, very Marathi, you know, name of that is Ukdiche Modak. So that is one of my most favorite things to eat.
It sounds delicious. And I love to talk about ethnic foods and the different kinds of cultures. So thank you for sharing that. Today, we're going to be talking about building effective teams. And I'm excited to hear about some of these ingredients that are important for teams to be high performing, successful, and effective.
Organizational psychologists have been very fascinated with teams and, you know, why teams are becoming more and more important, I think, today as compared to just individuals, even if they're highly talented individuals, is because the world is becoming much more uncertain and complex. And the first thing I'd like to say here is based on my own learning, right, that we do not always really work in teams. We might call ourselves a team, we might think we belong to a team, but we might actually be just belonging to a work group. A work group, the way I differentiate that is a work group is a group which has low interdependence and is usually based on some sort of organizational or managerial hierarchy. They may meet periodically, they may hear and share information, but that doesn't make them a team, because a team is really a group of individuals that are highly interdependent. You know, they need to plan work and solve problems and make decisions and review progress, everything together. That's what differentiates a team. And then, you know, I think it's important in the minds of those managers and leaders who might be really leading a team to take them on that journey from being just a work group to maybe, you know, there are some more elements of teaming towards in that, where you might then call it a pseudo team. And then you move on to becoming a full-fledged team, which means that the team members really need each other to get work done. And then, of course, you know, you continue on that journey to become a high-performing team. And the role of the leader also changes, you know, during these various phases of a group of people coming together, working really as a high-performing team. There's a lot of research that has been done around what makes teams high-performing. I want to allude to the work that was done by Google, or started by Google more than a decade back, under the name of the Aristotle Project. And I think that it captures a lot of the things that a lot of other research has found, with some, you know, some very unique twists. What I like and what I have seen in my own work are that there are five factors that really matter to make a team effective. I'll name those first, and then I'll say what each one of them means, right? So the first factor is psychological safety. The second one is dependability. The third is structure and clarity. The fourth is meaning. And the fifth is impact. Now, let me say a few words about each one of these. Psychological safety, I think, is probably the most important thing for a team to be high performing. It means that the team actually feels safe to take risk and be vulnerable in front of each other. There's a lot of research done, especially by a Harvard expert called as Amy Edmondson. And she started this work a few decades back. But I think as the world, as I said, becomes much more uncertain, and as the world becomes less, you know, as we start knowing less and less about more and more things, this whole element of teaming requires psychological safety. I should be able to say to my teammate, what was that again? I didn't get it. I should be able to say, this is something that I like to do. This is something that I'm not, you know, that I'm not really good at. Yeah. And you can only do that. You can only ask those so-called stupid questions if you feel safe. Most people in most teams will try to posture. They will actually try to show that things are working. They will try and upsell what they're able to do, etc., which are all signs of not having so much psychological safety.
This is a big one. Psychological safety is really, you know, the leader has to go first, right? They have to be the one to sort of break that barrier. I was talking yesterday about conflict. And you cannot have conflict unless you have psychological safety, because what ends up happening is you go silent or violent. We need to be able to have conflict on teams, because if we don't, we're not having innovation. We're not having new ideas come forward. If it's just one person driving the ship the entire time without other people being able to weigh in on it, then we have issues, right?
And so, undoubtedly. And actually, one of the signs of an effective team is their ability to have what I like to call healthy conflict. What do I mean about, you know, with healthy conflict? That means that you are actually having conflict around ideas rather than about people and personalities. Mm. It's not that, you know, working groups don't have conflicts, they do, but the way they do conflict can sometimes be detrimental to psychological safety, right? So even conflict, to have conflict or to have these conversations where you have opposing opinions, that is also a skill. You know, that is a skill that needs to be developed. And like you rightly said, the manager definitely has to go first. The leader has to be, you know, walking their talk. As I was saying to you just before we started, Julie, there have been so many of these layoffs currently in technology, and with the big what are they called? FANGs, as they are called, you know, so Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet, which is the owner of Google, of course, and Netflix and so on. There's so many people, 40,000 people have been laid off by these organizations, and most of them are highly profitable. Can you imagine what's happening to the psychological safety when this is happening? Especially, I mean, I heard that one of the organizations actually did not even involve the managers in identifying who should be laid off and why. The decision was extremely centrally driven, and it was communicated to people. The manager and the employee who's been let go, they got to know it at the same time. I can imagine that when something like that happens, to build psychological safety again, even with the so-called survivors, is going to be so, so difficult.
It is going to be difficult. Hey, let's just take a step back, and we have to get to all these five ingredients because they're all really important. But you said something to me that was very interesting, and that was around the conflict around the idea and how people are doing conflict. Mm-hmm. And so, like, how many people are actually creating a team norm about conflict and idea curation, you know, that you've set the stage for the ability to conflict around ideas? I don't think people are taking a step back and saying, hey guys, you know what? Like, seriously, I want to debate certain things that we have to do here. And it's okay to challenge ideas. It's not okay to challenge humans and people to make them feel bad, but having the ability to challenge ideas, to bring new ideas to the front, is super important for innovation. So I think that's a really
undoubtedly. And I mean, one of the key factors when people are able to have that quality of conversation, which might involve, you know, debating ideas and looking at pros and cons and hence making a decision, which is, of course, very, very closely linked to psychological safety, is does the team trust each other? You know, do they really believe that we are in it for the good of each other, that we care about each other, not just about the job that needs to be completed? Because as I said, and that is, again, another differentiator between a working group and a team, because if I am a member of a highly effective team, then I actually really like the people. It's not that I am an automaton and just trying to get the work done and get out of there, right? It's really that I enjoy the company of the people. I trust them. They can be, not all of them, but many of them will be my friends, you know? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been a part of such a team. The feeling in those kind of teams is completely different, you know, and those then become the bedrock of, like you said, innovation, because it's completely okay to challenge an idea. Going back to those 5 points, by the way. So the second one is dependability, right? Team members really need to know that if somebody says they'll do something, you know, at a particular time, and of course, in an acceptable quality, then that they will do it, that there is accountability. And the accountability is not just towards the so-called team leader or manager. I, as a team member, should feel accountable towards the other team member, and I should be able to also hold you accountable. You know, it's not that all of us need some kind of a leader who's continuously going to monitor and micromanage us. We have to say, this is our responsibility. And if something doesn't work, by the way, you know, I'm not wanting at all to be Pollyanna or that everything is always going to work, right? If something doesn't work, then I need to speak about it. I need to tell people well in advance, not after the deadline is too close, well in advance, saying, you know, I have, you know, hit upon some of these unexpected obstacles. And even though I said I'm going to finish something by next Thursday, looks like it's going to take another 2 weeks, you know. So say this, you know, that's also dependability. It's about closing the communication loop. Then, of course, structure and clarity, because, you know, the number of teams I work with, Julie, where it is not very clear to members what exactly are their roles and what are the potential overlaps between roles, right? There is a lot of energy being spent on performance management systems, and people will put goals and they'll make them smart, et cetera, et cetera. But in multiple teams, and especially the sort of teams that that are high performing, there will be a lot of overlap between what different people need to do. Right. And sometimes that is intentional, but many times it is not intentional. And even if it were or were not intentional, it's not communicated. I mean, I personally believe that one of the easy ways to do this is to really become transparent about people's roles and be transparent about people's goals. You don't need to be transparent about how you're evaluating on their goals, but what their goals are. Why not share that? You know, so few companies still at the level of each employee share the goals easily available for everybody else to see and watch. And, you know, and that, of course, eases conversation so much, right? Because if I wanted to work with you on a particular topic, on a particular project that is important to me, but it is not a part of your KPIs or your OKRs, whatever you call them, key performance indicators, or your you know, key areas that you're going to be judged on, then you're not going to work on it. You know, but because as human beings, we struggle to say no, I'm probably not going to directly say no to you, you know, so I'm going to say, yeah, maybe I'm going to try it, etc. And then you're getting frustrated, you know, why am I not really, you know, helping you to achieve your goals, right? So that whole transparency of goals, structure and clarity. Then the fourth factor is meaning. Now, this is an interesting one. And this, again, comes back to looking at people working in the team as human beings and not just as resources who get, you know, work done, not just as a human resource, but also as a human being. That means that I'm assigning work to you in a highly effective team where the work is not just because you are good at something, it's also because you are interested in it, you know? That work is personally important to you, maybe because you want to develop in that area. You're not good at it, you're taking baby steps in that area. Or it could be something that you want to do in the future. Or it could be something that you want to do better. Or stop doing something that you've done for n number of times and really feel very, very you know, bored about, you know, what can we do to enrich work for people, right? So the whole idea of creating meaning for work, and this is the beauty of a team, right, Julie? You are able to mix and match the kind of work that you can give to different people. You can match them based on their personality and their work preferences, right? And the team, especially if you have a decently sized team, I would say at least 6 to 7 people, then you can actually define work in such a way that it becomes interesting for many of them.
I think this is a really good point, and I think that leaders need to hear this. It is very important for the work to have meaning. It's very important for the employee to be inspired in such a way. And I don't think that we put enough training around this part or talk about it enough, but it's really important that people are getting excited every morning to get up to go to work. That's going to fuel their whole day. And I know there's different kinds of things that need to get done in a department, but we need to understand what we're giving our direct reports, what is stealing their energy, what is giving them energy. And I think that if we can balance the day for somebody, we're going to have much happier employees. And I think maybe burnout will drop, and also people might stop quitting their jobs. And this is really about the manager having the understanding of what the potential is, just like you said, to mix and match and to help the person grow and develop. There's nothing more that says, I care about you as a human, than helping that person in that way.
That's true. And this work needs to be done on a daily basis. It's not something that you are doing at the beginning of the year when you set the goals and then, you know, go and achieve them in whichever way that you deem fit. But as I said, yes, it is the role of the manager. I do believe, though, and I know that research has proven that a lot of highly effective teams, they do a lot of this work themselves, you know, so they are able to share with each other what is working for them, what doesn't work for them, and they can also rotate, you know, some of the work ideas. Maybe every quarter we're going to change the person who's going to do this so that it's done. And if it is, you know, if it's something that is not very exciting for anybody, then we sort of share the pain, right? So I think that is really, really important. And that's why I said the manager, sometimes I think the managers take too much of the responsibility on their own shoulders. You know, they need to become much more coach-like. What do I mean by that? They need to ask the questions and help people to find their own answers. They don't need to say, okay, now this is a problem and I need to resolve it and I don't have any good answer, so I'm stressed. That's not necessary, right? Use those team interactions that you have to, first of all, to invite and solicit feedback from people about their ways of working, and then having a conversation and creating solutions in the team. There is an added advantage to that, because once the solution comes from the team, they own it much, much better. And because they are, again, of different, you know, they have different preferences, they will look at that issue or that problem or that challenge from many different lenses that you couldn't do with your own blind spots, right? So it's sort of a win-win, but of course it needs time. And sometimes what happens is we fall into this trap of false economy. We feel that we are doing things very quickly, and all the conversations are about the work and about content. And this is something that I'm always bringing, and it's also linked to this, you know, to this idea of creating work that feels as if there is abundance around you, right? It's
That's
an
right.
abundance of ideas and abundance of possibilities, but it's also abundance of thinking around how do we want to shape work? You know, and it's not static, right? It's not something that you did once and then you never touch it again.
Right.
This is a conversation that you should have on a regular basis. I mean, that's what offsite should be used for. It's not always just discussing the strategy and where are we going. And of course, you need to do all of that. But how are we going to get there? And to get there, how are we going to make the ride enjoyable for everybody? But it's really impact, right? Team members really need to believe that their work matters. Yeah. And they are creating change, the sort of change that creates impact in the world. I mean, who likes, like Sisyphus, you know, just pushing the boulder up the mountain for it to roll down again? that's not going to be a great feeling, right? And there are so many jobs, Julie, unfortunately, like that today, that you just do it, you know, you're sort of, you know, doing repeatedly something, but you're not feeling as if, okay, so what change did that make, you know? And that, of course, is the job of the leader and the leadership team to be able to connect the dots, because some of the jobs today are so far removed from reality, you know, that you might struggle to see, okay, so how am I creating change? You know, how am I creating?
So I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Julie.
For being on the Stay on Course podcast. Tell us, where can our listeners find out more about you?
So I'm quite active on LinkedIn. I happen to have a unique name, Shivangi Valke. So I have my own website, and that's also based on my name. So it's shivangivalke.com. That's spelled Shivangivalke, shivangivalke.com.
Thank you so much. And thank you for being a guest on the Stay on Course podcast.
Thank you so much. Bye for now.
My dad, Ennio Riga, was not just a chef. He was my hero. From the hardships of World War II to the heights of culinary excellence, his story is nothing short of remarkable. Now, this story lives on in Stay on Course, a book that is very close to my heart. It's filled with his own words, his recipes, and the wisdom he imparted to me. Just imagine, 4 months before he passed, he handed me his life story, urging me to finish it. In these pages, you'll discover the secrets behind mouthwatering dishes and the lessons he taught me about leadership and perseverance. And trust me, there are some incredible tales in here, like the time he pulled off a birthday bash for Frank Sinatra with just 48 hours notice. So, if you're hungry for inspiration and craving a taste of Ennio's legacy, head over to stayoncoursebook.com. That's stayoncoursebook.com. Grab your copy and let his story ignite your passion.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Stay on Course. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast so Julie can continue serving up delectable experts and appetizing content directly to your earbuds. And remember, right now, you have the ingredients to be living the life you are meant to live. This has been a production of The Media Casters.